Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. It being August 1st, Democrats in Washington apparently decided that it's getting close enough to the November election that they had to get more serious about trying to hold the House and Senate. So they finally came to a deal on what used to be called Joe Biden's Build Back Better bill. Remember that? Now it's rebranded as the Inflation Reduction Act. And I think we can say no longer aims to make Biden the new FDR or the new LBJ. But it does make potentially transformative investments in preventing climate change, adds incentives for more fossil fuel production, too, in the short run, makes corporations pay at least a minimum amount of tax, and allows Medicare to begin negotiating the price of prescription drugs for seniors. That's all if the bill passes, which we still don't know, because even though Joe Manchin got on board, we don't know yet about Arizona Democrat Kyrsten Sinema. But we'll talk about the politics of Sinema and the bill and the midterms. We'll also talk about what's in and what's out of the original Build Back Better. And we'll do this with USA Today Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page. She's also author of the books Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons of Power, and The Matriarch, Barbara Bush, and The Making of an American Dynasty. And she's got a new one coming soon on TV journalist Barbara Walters. Susan, we always appreciate when you come on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, it's always my pleasure.
So let's start with what's in and what's out of this Inflation Reduction Act compared to Build Back Better. I think most of the press since Joe Manchin signed on is that it's going to be a big climate change bill. And we're going to talk about that as a separate segment on our climate story of the week on tomorrow's show. But I'm interested in what's in it. Is child care? There was going to be the seeds of a national child care program in the original Build Back Better. Is that in or is that out?
Out.
How about an expansion of elder care? More home health aides for more people who need it in their later years. Is that in or is that out?
That is out.
How about paid family leave? This was supposed to be such a big part of it, that in a world in which we want people of all genders to be able to work easily and don't know, you know, unfortunately, we do know that child care responsibility still falls primarily to women in heterosexual marriages. There's also taking care of elder relatives that would have been covered by some of this paid family leave that a lot of countries that we like to compare ourselves to have, but we don't. Paid family leave, is that in or is that out?
That is out.
And all of these because of Joe Manchin?
All of these because of the narrow Democratic margins in the House and the Senate. Manchin, of course, was the one who has been the biggest problem for Democrats. But the fact is, the bill that the form bill that was called Build Back Better turned out to be an overreach in what Democrats could hope to do with this particular congressional lineup. This is still a major bill, and it's a surprising achievement, assuming it passes, if it does. But it is not the bill that they were seeking a year ago.
So no more FDR, no more new LBJ for Joe Biden, at least for now.
Well, and as I said, look at the enormous Democratic majorities that FDR and LBJ had when they were passing their big initiatives, and compare it to what Joe Biden faces now, where you flip four seats in the House and you've got Republicans in control and you've got a 50-50 Senate. Could not be closer than that.
Senator Manchin was on Meet the Press yesterday explaining the new title of the bill, the Inflation Reduction Act. And the host, Chuck Todd, challenged him by saying, gee, these economists from the Wharton School at Penn say it won't do anything for inflation. So here's Joe Manchin saying why it will.
If you're producing more and have more demand, more supply, and that supply drives basically satisfies demand, and then the prices come down because there's more people shopping for the products. That's all. That's capitalism. Yeah. That's who we are.
So, Susan, can you take us further into that? How will this bill, if it passes, increase production of what that might bring down prices?
Well, it does. It is designed to increase production on the energy front, both in fossil fuels and also in clean energy sources. It is the biggest bill we've ever had when it comes to trying to do some of those things. It would, for instance, codify something the Trump administration did called one federal decision that means that if you want to build a pipeline or you want to build a nuclear power plant or you want to build other things involved, projects involving energy, you just have to go to one federal agency to get approval, not a lot of them. So that would make both things, both kinds of energy faster in production. And it would also kind of put on a speedier track 25 energy projects that President Biden would identify. And these are carefully divided between fossil fuel and clean energy. Five fossil fuel projects, six projects without fossil fuels, and then some to mine critical minerals. So those are the things that would increase production. Of course, energy has been one of the big factors in inflation, although it hasn't been the only one. Food, groceries, they've been a big factor too.
And on the question of whether this will pass the Senate, even with Joe Manchin, they need at least one more holdout Democrat, at least a holdout from the old Build Back Better version of this bill, to get on board. And that is Arizona Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema. Manchin could not tell the Meet the Press audience that she's on board, but he did say this about Senator Kyrsten Sinema.
And she basically insisted that no tax increases. Mm-hmm. We've done that. She was very, very adamant about that, and I support and I agree with her. She was also very instrumental in making sure that we had drug prices that Medicare could compete on certain drugs to bring it down so that there wouldn't be an impact on individuals on Medicare across. She's done all this, so she has a tremendous amount of input in this piece of legislation, and I would like to think she would be favorable towards it, but I respect her decision. She'll make her own decision based on the contents.
Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday. We're talking about it with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. And listeners, we can take a few phone calls on anything national politics related to this bill and the midterms, which we'll get to, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. The very first part of that Manchin clip that we just played, Susan, is, I think, the controversial part where he says Senator Sinema basically insisted on no tax increases. The Republicans are saying there is a tax increase in this bill. The Democrats, including Manchin, are saying, no, there's no tax increase. We just closed a loophole on corporations. Can you explain what it is?
Yeah. Brian, welcome to Washington. It is a tax increase. Even if you're closing a loophole and it has the effect of raising taxes, it's a tax increase. There was something else that I think Manchin acknowledged, that he has not actually talked to Senator Sinema since this came out. And he said one thing that is not accurate. He said Senator Sinema had a big effect on, weighed in. There are provisions. She was part of shaping this bill. That's not exactly true. Only two people shaped this bill, and that was Senator Schumer and Senator Manchin. And Senator Sinema says she was surprised when this version came out, surprised that this bill was getting revived. I think that probably didn't make her, I think that probably wasn't happy news for her not to have been consulted. And that's, I think, one reason that she hasn't weighed in yet on whether she'll support it or whether she might demand some fix on the tax issues that she has cared about. She has been opposed to raising what's called carried interest, which I cannot explain to you, except I know that hedge fund owners like it a lot. It's something that's helpful to those in that field, and she has been a defender of that provision. So we'll see if that gets adjusted as this tries to get through the Senate. Because, of course, as you say, there's not a state, they have not one vote to spare on this measure.
So what's the timeline on this? When do you think I'll be able to ask you back on the show and say, okay, Susan Page, Kyrsten Sinema, is she in or is she out?
You know, Congress always acts in such a predictable and quick way. It's really been, it's a wonderful place to work because they always do what they say. So what they, and I'm saying that sarcastically. So what they say is that he might bring it to the floor. Senator Schumer says he might bring it to the floor this week. That's pretty quick. There are some technical provisions that have to be looked at before it can be brought forward. And then you're going to have that wonderful process we call Votorama, where any senator can put forward any amendment and force a vote on it. But they are looking, Democrats are hoping to get a vote on this by the end of this week or by next weekend. We'll see if they can meet that timetable.
And as far as that loophole, the way I described it in the intro, tell me if this is right, the way I understand it is it would be a 15% corporate minimum tax for corporations of a certain size. And I've already read one article that says, that sounds great on paper. Make sure that really big companies aren't avoiding all their taxes by locating their headquarters in another country or something like that. But it would actually affect very few companies. What do you know?
That I believe that's right. In effect, of course, only the biggest companies. But one thing we found with big companies is that they have a lot of tax lawyers on their payroll, and they are sometimes very skilled in figuring out to avoid efforts to increase their tax burden.
And so we will see what actually happens with that, even if it does pass. How about the Medicare prescription drug negotiation? This has been something that, as you know, they've been talking about in Washington forever and ever and ever. Medicare has not been allowed to negotiate price with prescription drug makers. Republicans have resisted it for a long time. They say Medicare has too much clout in the market. But of course, the pharmaceutical companies want to maintain all the clout for themselves when they sell all these pharmaceuticals to so many seniors in this country. What is changing under this bill if it passes?
Well, to allow Medicare to negotiate prices on medication is just a huge deal. It'd be a huge money saver for the government. It could save seniors a lot of money on their prescriptions. The argument that Big Pharma makes, which I have seen in an ad, you know, on an hourly basis, if you have TV on, explaining their point of view, is that it will hurt efforts to find new drugs. But this is a provision that has long been sought after. It's long been a liberal cause. It's one of the fact that we don't allow the government to negotiate the prices of prescription is one reason that Americans pay so much higher drug prices than, say, folks in Canada.
Dan in Hartsdale, you're on WNYC with Susan Page from USA Today. Hi, Dan.
Hi. This is an incredibly naive question that I have, but why is it that the media never asks a Republican? I understand that they're lockstep and all of that, except like Susan Collins or Mitt Romney. Why doesn't a reporter ever ask one of them specifically why they would vote against this kind of legislation?
Great question, and one we've talked about on the show, but a great question to renew for this new, more moderate version of the bill that got Joe Manchin to sign on. Is there a Susan Collins possibility? Is there a Mitt Romney possibility here? And might some of the Republican senators up for re-election this year, being what this bill would do for prescription drugs for seniors and some of the other things we've been talking about, feel the pressure to vote for it instead of 50 automatic Republican no votes on a Democratic bill?
So I do think reporters ask Republicans how they will vote on this bill. But so far, there has been no sign that any Republican senator will be willing to cross over and support this bill, which would mean, you know, you wouldn't depend on Manchin. It wouldn't depend on Sinema. You know, they would argue that they think this bill costs too much, that they disagree with some of the policies in the bill. Some of them oppose, for instance, the Medicare provisions. Many of them oppose the tax provisions, whether you describe it as closing a loophole or raising taxes. But there is also the fact that we are just in a time where we have divided into tribes, and it is very, very hard to get a member of the Senate to cross over to the other side. This is not a time where bipartisanship is quite the exception and not the rule.
And I believe the Republican position is that this bill is cynically misnamed by the Democrats, the Inflation Reduction Act, right? Instead of talking about the things that we opened the segment with that were in the original Build Back Better, national child care program for the first time, a national elder care program for the first time, paid family leave for the first time, which would reduce some of the race and class economic differences, disparities in this country. Now we're talking about reducing inflation, which is more of a shorter term goal. But the Republicans say, I saw a Chuck Grassley statement saying, wait, Inflation Reduction Act, something that throws hundreds of billions of dollars more into the economy, that would be inflationary, not deflationary. And something that raises taxes on those big corporations in a time of a recession, at least two quarters of contraction in a row, which technically by some measures counts as a recession, that's gonna hurt job growth. So this is the wrong time for that. So this doesn't fight inflation. This fuels inflation. That's the Republican position. And I guess they've got 50 out of 50 senators on board with that, huh?
Yes. I'm not sure I believe that the name of the bill is the driver of positions on it. But yes, there's a difference of opinion on what the economic impact would be of this bill. Democrats would respond that it does help the economy. It will help the economy. But on most bills, and there have been a couple exceptions, the CHIPS bill that passed, for instance, passed on a bipartisan basis. On most of these matters that come up
chips production, making computer chips in this country. Uh-huh.
Really important, a big bill and one that passed in a bipartisan way. It's such the exception that I'm not sure to what degree the provisions of a bill matter more than just which side you're on.
That's life in 2022. Michael in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Susan Page. Hi, Michael.
Hi. So to me, the political story of the last 2 years has been that the Democrats, when they won in 2020, they treated it as if they had 60 votes in the Senate. And Ms. Page alluded to this earlier when she talked about Build Back Better as overreach. They acted like they came into office with 60 votes and a national mandate. And they didn't have that. They didn't have anything close to that. They had the slimmest majority possible. And they just shot themselves in the foot when they did things like they tied the infrastructure bill to Build Back Better. So instead of passing an infrastructure bill within the first few months in a bipartisan way, and they could have said, look, you elected us, we're in the majority, we're governing responsibly. Instead, they tied it to Build Back Better, and the Republicans and Mitch McConnell just waited them out. And eventually, it took them a year to pass infrastructure, and they looked foolish doing it instead of claiming victory. And again, Brian was asking all these questions about, is this in the bill? Is that in the bill? Because I know you were referencing Build Back Better, but Build Back Better was never realistic. I mean, I'm a left-leaning person. I would love for all of those things and Build Back Better to be reality. But I voted for Joe Biden because Biden knew the Senate. He knew Joe Manchin. I thought he would be realistic. Joe Manchin, the Democrats are lucky to have Joe Manchin in the Senate. He won in a state that Trump won by 40 points. And it's the only reason why they have a majority in the Senate is because they have those 50 votes. I don't understand why the Democrats, and I like Bernie Sanders, and I think he's right about a lot of things, but there's just a realism, there's a realistic approach that the Democrats just squandered. And they could have done all these things. They could have done infrastructure. They could have done the bill that they're doing now, and they could have looked like responsible people who know how to govern responsibly and get things done. And instead, it's taking them 2 years to get these things done. And relative to their expectations, they've just looked foolish. And the fact of the matter is Manchin's been talking about inflation for a year, and he was right about it. Inflation wasn't just going to go away. So to me, the big story of the last 2 years is that the Democrats came out swinging like they had 60 votes the way Obama actually did have 60 votes in 2008. And they just ruined they made themselves look bad.
Michael,
unfortunately.
I'm curious for you, when Biden was first elected and first inaugurated, and we were at the height of the pandemic, and there was massive pandemic-related unemployment from the lockdowns and everything, and you know the need, as people saw it, to isolate ourselves to try to stop the spread. There was massive death happening, especially among the senior population. And I think they gambled that paid family leave in particular, paid childcare in particular, so people could start to get back to work, was going to be a consensus position. In fact, I think those things to this day poll very well in the United States. Did you think at the start that they were politically unrealistic items?
Yes, because things like gun control poll really well in the United States. Things like abortion rights poll really well in the United States. But we don't. That's not how we make legislation. We make legislation with 50 senators and or 60. And you need 60. And the one thing, the thing that I had the most hope about Biden was that he was a long-term member of the Senate. I mean, he's been in the Senate since he's 29 years old, 30 years old.
So he would have his feet on the ground in terms of political realities there,
right? He knew these people. He knows, he's known Joe Manchin for decades. And the Democrats just kept saying, oh, if it wasn't for Joe Manchin, we would be able to. But Joe Manchin, the reality is, and this is the realistic part, Joe Manchin is the sitting senator from West Virginia. West Virginia was won by Donald Trump by 40 points. The fact that we have a Democratic senator from West Virginia, to me, is miraculous. And it's the only reason why we have 50 votes in the Senate to begin with.
Michael, thank you so much. I got to leave it there for time, but thank you so much. Do call us again. Susan, what about his analysis? And, you know, the heart of it really is, hey, come on, Joe Biden knew who Joe Manchin was. He blew it by not putting something forward that was politically realistic at the start.
Well, I think Michael should have his own podcast because that was, I think, a very smart analysis of what's going on. The only thing I would say is the White House is recalibrating. And Democrats, you know, after that overreach of Build Back Better, they came up with this new reconciliation bill out of the blue. I mean, I think it was a surprise to even others in the Senate that they were able to get a bill that is still a significant bill that has a very good chance of getting through the Senate and being enacted into law. They did have passed the CHIPS bill. I agree that Democrats had a lot of exuberance having defeated Donald Trump for a second term that overread the mandate that they had, but they're not doing nothing. And this is, I think we make a mistake if we think this is not a big achievement because it is not as big as Build Back Better.
So last question. You are the author of the book, Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons of Power. She may learn the lesson of losing power this November, or maybe that's just the conventional wisdom and the Democrats can hold their House and Senate majorities. Has the Supreme Court ruling on abortion or this new agreement with Joe Manchin in the Senate, if it actually becomes law, or anything else changed that outlook recently, do you think?
Well, we have a new poll out yesterday that shows Democrats really getting energized by the abortion issue in the weeks since the decision was handed down. Democrats now say abortion is the number one issue on their minds. Two-thirds of Democrats say it makes them more likely to go to vote. That's a good sign for Democrats. But can Democrats hold the House? History says they can't. Republicans only need to gain 4 seats to win control of the House. And I think any honest analysis says they're going to get the majority. The question is whether they get a small majority or a big one.
Susan Page, USA Today, Washington Bureau Chief, author of Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons of Power, and the Matriarch, Barbara Bush, and the Making of an American Dynasty. And she's got a new one coming soon on TV journalist Barbara Walters. When's your Barbara Walters book coming out?
Hey, next year, Brian, and I'm in the market for any Barbara Walters stories people have.
Hey, in New York, people might have a few. So contact Susan Page at USA Today with your Barbara Walters stories if you have one. And obviously, we'll have you on for a book interview at that time. And since it's not till next year, a bunch of times between now and then. Susan, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Brian.